Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Last night, I dreamed of Owen Deathstalker. He was walking slowly through the empty stone corridors of his old family castle, the Deathstalker standing on Viramond. He was tall and rangy, with dark hair and darker eyes, moving with the quiet grace of long martial training. It looked like he'd had to walk forever to get home. His clothes were torn and bloodstained, topped with a great fur cloak. His face was tired and drawn, and his eyes were haunted and quietly sad. His footsteps made no sound at all as he strode slowly down the ancient flagstones. But then, he was a dead man after all, walking through a castle that hadn't existed for centuries. He wore a sword on one hip and a gun on the other, though he always thought of himself as a scholar who became a warrior, almost against his will, because he was needed, because there was no one else. A man of peace and reason, destined and doomed to fight in one war after another, who fought for justice for all, and knew so little of it himself. Not for him the simple joys and comforts of hearth and home and family, of children and grandchildren and peace of heart. Owen was a hero, and so he had died alone, far too young, and far from friends, saving all humanity. He overthrew the Empress Lionstone, destroyed her evil and corrupt system, and replaced it with the seeds of what would eventually become a golden age. He gave hope and freedom to all the people of the Empire for the first time, and never lived to see any of it. Deathstalker luck. Always bad. Destiny is a cold and heartless beast, and cares nothing for the pawns it sacrifices. In my dream, I saw him walk into a gorgeously appointed chamber that hasn't existed for over 200 years.
I don't believe it!
And I saw him greet his old friends and companions.
Owen! Oh my god, Owen!
Hazel Dark, ex-pirate and clone-legger, the one great love of Owen's life.
Ah, there he is, looking none the worse for wear.
Jack Random, the professional rebel.
Well, look at you!
Ruby Journey, the female bounty hunter, who never could resist a challenge.
It is good to see you, my old friend.
And the Haidman Tobias Moon, who fought so hard for his own humanity. They all gripped hands and hugged each other, clapped each other on the back and on the shoulder. So happy to be together again. For all their differences, they were always friends. They laughed together. But I couldn't hear them. Five ghosts of the people they used to be, in the memory of a castle no longer standing. All gone now, long gone. Dead and gone these 200 years. I miss them so much. In my dream I called out to them, and Owen turned and looked at me. I tried to warn him of the terror yet to come, but he couldn't hear me. Too many years separated us. Years and more. As I sit here writing this, burdened with memory, it's hard to remember him the way he really was. The man, not the myth. The hero, not the legend. Last night, I dreamed of Owen Deathstalker, and the way things were. And I wish, oh how I wish, that I could have slept and dreamed forever, and never had to wake up.
Graphic Audio presents Simon R. Green's Deathstalker Legacy. Narrated by Richard Rowan, with performances by Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Vanessa Benjamin, Sonny Lasky, Terence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Jeff Baker, Ken Jackson, Casey Jones, Kate Torrey, Chris Chris Rowan, and Mort Shelby. Graphic audio sound design by Chris Rowan. Adapted for graphic audio and directed by Richard Rowan. Episode 1, The Ceremony of Innocence.
It was a golden age, damn it. People tend to forget that in the wake of all that happened. They forget from how high a point they fell, or were pushed, or jumped. But for over 100 years, the Empire had known peace and prosperity, unbridled growth and progress, and justice for all. A golden empire, the very best parts of humanity writ large across the stars. It was a time of unprecedented breakthroughs and advances, made all the more glorious because its wondrous spoils were shared so freely with those who were not human. The Empire now embraced clones, espers, aliens, and even those who had once been the official enemies of humanity, the AIs of Shub. For almost 200 years, these disparate elements had labored together to forge a new empire from the ruins of the old, to produce a whole far greater than the sum of its parts. Triumph followed triumph. Marvels and miracles were the order of the day, every day, and no one could see any reason why it shouldn't continue forever. Sparkling cities on shining worlds, a civilization born of hope and honor, and dreams come true. It wasn't a perfect age. There are always some who cannot or will not embrace the oldest dream of humanity, to live in peace with itself. Even standing in the brightest sun, some parts of humanity see only the dark shadow they cast, would rather live in hell than see their enemies enjoy heaven with them. It was a golden age then, for all its occasional faults, which makes it all the more sad that no one seemed to appreciate it till it was gone, torn apart and cast down by the arrival of the terror and the wounded pride of one terrible man. It was Christmas Eve on the planet called Logris, once known as Golgotha, now the center of the greatest empire ever known. Logris, a bright and glorious world, whose cities were famous throughout the empire for their sights and wonders, their heroes and celebrities, their innovations and achievements. The finest minds and hearts and souls came to Logris to be a part of the great advance of empire, the warriors and scientists, the poets and philosophers, the daring and the divas, to kneel before the golden thrones and ask how best they might serve the greatest adventure of all. And in the most noble and exalted of all these cities, the ancient Parade of the Endless, full of marvels and wonders and the pride of empire, it was a time of hope and renewal and great celebration. For this Christmas Eve would see the crowning of a new king. Douglas Campbell, paragon and wielder of the King's Justice, entered the imperial court from the back, slipping between the heavy black velvet curtains as quietly as possible, hoping not to be noticed. He leaned against the middle of the three thrones, carelessly elegant in his paragon's armor. He had hoped for a little peace and quiet, a moment or two of reflection, but it was not to be. It was a good 6 hours before the ceremony was due to begin, but already a small army of people were bustling back and forth across the vast floor of the court, shouting unheard orders and complaints at each other as they hurried on their urgent errands, determined that everything should be absolutely perfect for the coronation. It was going to be a day to remember, a ceremony viewed across all the empire, and no one intended to be found wanting in the crunch. Still, they all seemed very sure of what they were doing. Douglas could only envy them their certainty. He stood quietly beside the king's throne, huge and ornate and reputedly hideously uncomfortable to sit on, looking about him. The imperial court was just as vast and impressive as he remembered it, still as steeped in history and pageantry and significance, which was probably why he'd avoided it so assiduously for more than 20 years. He didn't like to be reminded that he was not only a paragon, but also a prince, the only son of King William. A prince soon to be made king, much against his will. It wasn't fair. Only 40 years old, and already the days of his freedom were over. He'd always known this day would have to come eventually, but though he had to admit he had a natural gift for authority, he'd always had a quiet dread of responsibility. He hated the thought of other people's lives and happiness depending on his word and decision. He wasn't up to it. He knew that, deep down. Even after 20 years as a paragon, meeting out the king's justice, he'd been happy as a paragon, out in the field, away from the court, fighting the good fight. Because even the greenest fields and the most contented flocks can still be threatened by wolves. Douglas liked the certainties of his old job. Good guys versus bad guys, blade to blade, testing your strength on the anvil of your faith of what was right. Straightforward conflicts with no moral, philosophical, or legal ambiguities. Paragons were only ever unleashed on the vilest, most irredeemable villains. Once he was made king and speaker to Parliament, he'd be trapped in the altogether trickier arena of politics, with its ever-shifting ground and deals born of compromise. And he, the poor bastard on the golden throne, would be expected to be the rock of certainty for everyone else. Douglas looked at the throne, soon to be his, and wondered if he was afraid. He was never afraid when he was doing his job out in the city, cutting down those who threatened the peace. But to be king, a living example to the whole empire. As king, he'd be rich, famous, and powerful, and Douglas didn't want any of it. All he wanted was what he couldn't have, to be just a man, as other men, to be free, to be what he made of himself. Douglas Campbell, son of William and Niamh, grandson of Robert and Constance, was tall, broad-shouldered, roughly handsome, with an easy smile and steady eyes. Eyes the deep blue of a summer sky, and a mouth that was firm, even when it was smiling. And a long, thick mane of golden hair, brushed straight back from his high forehead and held in place with a silver band. Even now, standing quietly, unnoticed, he was a fighting man, and he looked it, completely at peace in his paragon's armor and purple cloak, sword on one hip and gun on the other. And both of them had known hard use in their time. Douglas took satisfaction from being a warrior, trained and true. But to his credit, he tried hard not to take joy from the killing that came with the job. You only killed a man when you knew for sure he was beyond saving, and that was a terrible decision to have to make. It usually helped you to decide if he was trying to kill you at the time, but still... Douglas looked down at his armor. There was a mark on his breastplate from where a sword point had come too close that afternoon. He rubbed at the mark with his hand and polished it with a handful of his cloak. He was going to find it hard to give up his practical uniform for the official robes of state he'd have to wear as king. At least he wouldn't have to wear the crown all the time. Cut from a single huge diamond, it was a heavy bloody thing, and a pain to wear for any length of time, according to his father. Unless he was being metaphorical again. In fact, Douglas acknowledged with an internal sigh, he should have changed into his robes by now, ready for the final rehearsal. But still he put it off, because once he put aside his armor, his old life was over, the change in him final and forever. Maybe he was afraid of growing up. He smiled at that, despite himself. There were probably billions of people all across the empire dreaming of all the things they would do if they were king, and here he was, dragging his feet. There were times when he seriously thought the whole damned universe ran on irony. He heard footsteps approaching behind him and looked around guiltily. He knew who it was, who it had to be. The black velvet curtains opened abruptly, and there was King William, frowning at his only son and heir. Douglas straightened up and did his best to look regal and dignified, knowing even as he did so that he wasn't fooling anyone. King William advanced remorselessly on his son, who stood his ground and tried a pleasant smile, just on the off chance it might make a difference for once. The king came to a halt before his son, looked him up and down, took in that he still hadn't changed into his robes, and glared at him. Douglas hung on to his smile. He just knew there was another speech coming.
200 years ago, your grandparents, the blessed Robert and Constance, became the first constitutional monarchs of the empire, replacing the depraved and deposed Empress Lionstone, damnation to her memory. For 200 years, first they and then your mother and I served as humanity's first family, the people's voice and conscience among the powers that be. Very soon now, it will be your turn. And you can't even be bothered to dress properly for the occasion. Oh, tell me I haven't made a terrible mistake in stepping down in your favor, boy.
I'll get changed in a minute, Father. There's still time yet.
There's never enough time. First lesson you learn is king. The faster you deal with things, the more things they find for you to do. It's a hard job and a never-ending one. But that's how you know it's important. How you know that what you're doing matters.
You don't have to step down, Father. You still have years of service in you.
Don't flatter me, boy. I'm 150 years old. And some days I feel every damned minute of it. I might have another 20 years in me, or I might not. Either way, I plan on enjoying what years are left to me in peaceful retirement. I've earned that much.
His face softened just a little, and he put a hand on Douglas's armored shoulder.
I held on as long as I could, for your sake. But it's time for me to go, Douglas. Well, past time.
He paused, his eyes suddenly far away. Douglas knew his father was thinking of his other son, James. His first son, trained from boyhood to be king, admired and adored by all. Everyone said he'd make a great king, the brightest and best of his line. Everything was set for him to take the throne on his 21st birthday. Only he died in a stupid traffic accident. That clever, charismatic brain smeared all over the front of a speeding vehicle that came out of nowhere. The other driver's fault. He was drunk. When he sobered up later and discovered what he'd done, he wept like a child and killed himself. Too late to do anyone any good. The king and queen had only had the one son. Current medical technology, with widely available tissue cloning and regeneration, meant everyone had a good chance of living till 150. Some even made it to 200. As a result, population levels had been rising all over the empire, filling up the civilized worlds at dizzying speed. Small families, of one or at most two children, were encouraged by everything short of actual legislation, and the king and queen did their bit by example. Which was all well and good until the empire's only prince lay dying in a gutter, and the regeneration machine couldn't get there in time. Everything stopped for James's funeral. Everyone mourned the loss of the best king they'd never have. They made a saint out of him, or the man he might have become. And even to this day, a flame still burned over his grave. But still, the empire needed a prince, and so Douglas came along, very late in his mother and father's life. The prince who wasn't perfect. These days, people stayed in their physical prime right up to the end of their lives. But even so, Douglas knew his parents for only an unusually short time before the first inevitable signs of deterioration began. It was hard for Douglas to remember a time when they hadn't seemed old. And James was such a hard act to follow. His mother, the Queen Niamh, died very suddenly. For no obvious reason, the life just went out of her. And in a few months, she went from an aged but still vital woman to a wrinkled face in a hospital bed that Douglas barely recognized. She died while they were still trying to work out what it was that was killing her. Douglas could have told them. She was old and felt old. It was her time, and she'd always been far too polite to outstay her welcome. King William hadn't seemed really old until his wife died, but when she left, it seemed to Douglas that she took the best of her husband with her, leaving behind a broken old man looking forward to his own death. Though he still had enough spark in him to run his son ragged, William might be about to retire and devote what remained of his life to pottering about in the historical archives, following in the footsteps of his hero, the legendary Owen Deathstalker. But before he stepped down, William was determined to make Douglas every inch the king that William had always wanted him to be.
I'm sorry I can't be the king that James would have been. I'm sorry I can't be the son to you that he was.
I've never said that.
You didn't have to.
Let me tell you something, my boy. You know, I wasn't always king. There was a time when I...
But Douglas wasn't listening. He looked at his father and wished they could have been closer. Wished they'd had something in common. But the ghost of James had always been there, and Douglas could never compete with that. So all that was left was for Douglas to do his best to be his own man, even if that man wasn't what his father had wanted or intended. King William was still slender and elegant for all his years, but the grace had gone out of him with Niamh's death. His short, neatly trimmed hair was as much white as gray, and getting decidedly patchy. His face was heavily lined and shrunken, and his official robes flapped loosely about him now. He moved slowly and carefully, as though he'd become fragile, and perhaps he had at that. His mind was still sharp, though his speeches tended to flounder and get lost in their own arguments if they went on for too long, like this one. Douglas listened with half an ear and looked out over the court again, still trying to get his head around the idea that as from tomorrow, it would all be his.
It should have been James's. He would have known what to do with it.
The wide open space of the great hall was bounded by towering walls made from warm and glowing woods from 100 worlds across the empire, culminating in an arched ceiling of interlocking beams that was practically a work of art. Even the colorful mosaics of the great open floor were constructed from thousands upon thousands of tiny wooden plaques, waxed and buffed and shined till they seemed to glow with their own inner light. This new court, built right in the heart of the Parade of the Endless, had been designed and constructed as a deliberate contrast to the inhumanly cold metal and marble court of the deposed Lionstone, long abandoned now in its bunker deep in the earth. This was to be a more human court, for more human monarchs, reflecting the warmth and open-heartedness of King Robert and Queen Constance, of blessed memory. Douglas looked over at their huge, idealized images, shining from the stained glass windows at the far end of the hall. He tried to feel or find some connection between them and him, but it was hard. They were both dead and gone long before even James was born. Douglas's gaze wandered over the images in the other stained glass windows, the icons of empire, blazing fiercely as the late afternoon light fell through the glass in bright shimmering shafts. They seemed more like saints and angels than heroes of the old empire. All long gone now, but everyone knew their names.
Owen Deathstalker, Hazel Dark, Jack Random, Ruby Journey.
Douglas could feel his chest tighten as he said the old names of glory to himself. He felt as though he should kneel to them, just for being in their presence. What did being a king mean in comparison to who they were and what they did? And yet, they were real men and women, once. Before they were transformed from heroes into legends, what human imperfections they might have had wiped away, and their rough edges smoothed over, their humanity forgotten, so that they might be worshipped the more easily. Douglas felt guilty at such a thought, but unlike many, he was in a position to know some of the truth. Very early in their reign, King Robert and Queen Constance allowed themselves to be persuaded by Parliament to sign a decree destroying all the actual footage of humanity's saviors in action. Not one scrap, not one contemporary record remained of what the blessed heroes actually did during the rebellion. Not one interview survived, not one hollow image. Every last news report or eyewitness account had been carried out of the archives and museums and news stations and wiped clean or burned. It was hard work constructing a golden age. Humanity needed legends to inspire them, perfect men and women they could worship and revere. Facts would only have gotten in the way. And the greatest legend of all had arisen around Owen Deathstalker, the Lord of Viramond, who gave up wealth and power and prestige to fight Lionstone's evil. The good man who saw humanity's plight and could not look away. The greatest warrior of his time, who somehow single-handedly saved humanity from extinction at the hands of the recreated out in the dark, dark spaces of the Rim, and never returned home to receive the thanks and blessings of a grateful empire. No one knew what had become of Owen Deathstalker. He passed easily out of history and into legend. And though not a year went by without some sighting of him, quietly doing good, healing the sick, or performing some minor miracle, most preferred to believe he was sleeping somewhere, resting and preserving his strength for the day he would be called back to be a hero and a savior again, in the hour of the Empire's greatest need. There were statues and shrines to him all across the Empire, and even after all these years, people still laid fresh flowers at those sites every day. Beside the two great golden thrones of the court, of king and queen, there was a third throne, simple and unadorned, and set slightly apart, waiting there for Owen, should he ever return. There were other idealized figures portrayed in the court's stained glass windows. Stevie Blue, of course, the Esper martyr and saint, wrapped in bright blue flames of her own making, who lived so briefly but blazed so very brightly. No such portrait for Diana Virtue, of course. Even the official myth-making process hadn't been able to smooth the rough edges off Jenny Psycho. She'd been dead almost 100 years now, and the powers that be were still scared she might someday make a comeback. But the greatest icon of them all, represented again and again in windows all across the court, venerated and adored, was the only real saint of the Empire, the Blessed Saint Beatrice, more respected, more important, and more loved than any poor damned hero. Douglas liked to think Owen would have approved.
This doesn't mean your life is over. Quite the contrary. Although there is much in the duties of a constitutional monarch that you will no doubt find tedious, I think with wisdom and experience you will find that duty is indeed...
He was hardly listening to his father at all now, lost in his own thoughts. Douglas was intelligent and cynical enough to know the political reasons and imperatives behind the creation of such legends, but still... These had been real men and women once, and they had overthrown an empire. His breath caught in his throat as he thought of what it must have been like to fight such a clear and obvious evil in the company of such people in the Great Rebellion. Everything and everyone seemed so much smaller now. Part of him ached to know what it must have been like to have fought in a war when giants walked the worlds. Douglas was proud to have been a paragon, to have fought the good fight and protected the people. But for all the good he'd done, the lives he'd saved, and the things he'd accomplished, no one would ever set his image in stained glass after he was gone or set aside a throne for his return. He was a paragon, and he'd done his job. That should be enough. To be king was actually a step down as far as he was concerned. This vast and glorious court was only there for show, for ceremonial matters, and the kind of empty pageantry the people still loved. Power lay with Parliament, as of course it should. The king had a place there, but only as speaker, to preside over debates and provide an impartial voice to help Parliament reach its decisions. As it should be, of course. The members of Parliament represented the worlds of empire, one seat to a planet. They were the voice of humanity and expressed its will, mostly. But never again would any one man or woman be allowed dominion over humanity. Not after Lionstone. Douglas approved. He really did. It was just that, if he had to be king, he wanted it to mean something. Desperate for distraction, Douglas's gaze wandered over the hundreds of people scurrying back and forth in the court, until his eyes stumbled over a short, stocky man in a shimmering white gown and tall, jewel-encrusted mitre. And then Douglas had to smile. It was good to know there was someone in the court who wanted to be there even less than he did. As tradition demanded, and there's nothing more intractable than a fairly newly minted tradition, the new king would be crowned by the patriarch of the empire's official religion, the Church of Christ Transcendent. However, the current patriarch had been in his job for only about 5 minutes, following the sudden and very unexpected death of the previous matriarch in an accident apparently so embarrassing that the church still wasn't willing to release any details on the subject. So the new patriarch, chosen by blind lottery from among the 122 cardinals, had turned out to be an extremely inexperienced 27-year-old man from a backwater planet who'd only been made cardinal because no one else on that world wanted the position. No one doubted his sincerity or his good intentions, but it was clear to Douglas that the new patriarch couldn't have been any more nervous if someone put a gun to his mitered head. Pretty much the whole empire would be tuning in to watch him crown the new king, and the opportunities for screw-ups, fiascos, and making a complete bloody prat of himself were almost limitless. The patriarch was currently walking up and down, endlessly shuffling and rechecking his notes, while mumbling his lines and accompanying himself with emphatic gestures. The servants were watching him out of the corner of their eyes, and giving him plenty of room. Douglas's smile widened into a grin, as he considered the happy possibilities in sneaking up behind the patriarch and saying boo very loudly. A firm hand took hold of Douglas's right ear and twisted sharply.
Ah! Bloody hell!
Douglas froze as everyone in the court stopped what they were doing to turn and look at him. King William had released his ear by now, but Douglas could feel the fierce blush reddening his cheeks. He gestured curtly for the servants to continue in their tasks, and they did so. But he just knew what they were thinking. Douglas turned and glared at his father, who grinned nastily back at him.
Teach you to pay attention when I'm talking to you, boy. I may be old, decrepit, and far from my prime, but I am still your father and your king. And while I am speaking, I will have your full attention and respect. Is that clear, Douglas?
Yes, damn it. Jesus, I bet the other paragons don't have to put up with this.
Now, then, where was I? Oh, I hate it when I can't remember things. Ah, yes. Would it surprise you to learn that I never wanted to be king either? My father just took it for granted that I would follow in his footsteps, and so did everyone else. And I wasn't strong enough to fight them. Your grandparents were both very forceful personalities. I never was. I did what was expected of me, because it was easier that way. Story of my life, really. I knew from the start you weren't going to be anything like James. He studied hard to be king, because he wanted it. I never did figure out what you wanted. So in the end, I settled for raising you to be as tough-minded and independent as I could, to be nothing like me. So that when you finally came to the throne, at least you'd bring something new to it. In many ways, you're a lot like your grandfather. You will be King Douglas, because I want it, because Parliament wants it, and most important of all, because the people want it.
And what I want doesn't matter.
The best person to wield power is the man who doesn't want it. The blessed Deathstalker said that, supposedly. What will you do, Douglas, once you are king? Have you considered the matter at all?
Of course I have.
This was far too public a place for raised voices and an open row, but somehow his father's goading always pushed Douglas's temper to the edge.
I've thought about nothing else for months. And I'll tell you this. If I'm going to be king, I'm going to be king. I won't just sit around nodding my head to whatever Parliament says. I'll not be anyone's rubber stamp. Everyone says this is a golden age, and maybe it does look all bright and shiny from up here. But as a paragon, I saw the darker side of things. I saw people suffering every day at the hands of villains who got away as often as not, because I was just one man and I couldn't be everywhere. Well, what I couldn't put right as paragon, maybe I can fix as king.
William surprised Douglas then by nodding cheerfully in agreement.
Well done, Douglas. Well said. A little naive, but well-intentioned. That attitude is why I pulled every string I had, called in every favor owed to me to get you made a paragon. James was a good boy and well-intentioned too, but he never raised his head out of his books. I wanted you out in the city, among the people, seeing the things they won't let me see. I wanted you to see the Empire not as a king's son, but as one of the people who make it work. I'm glad to see my efforts weren't wasted. You don't want to give up being a paragon, do you, my boy?
No. No, I don't.
Then be a paragon on a throne. The crown may not have any real power, but it still has influence. You don't have to care about political niceties, such as whether backing an unpopular position might interfere with your getting re-elected. You can say the right thing, the necessary thing, and to hell with what's expedient. You can still get things done if you care enough. My problem was, I never did care enough about most things. I drifted through my life, always following the path of least resistance. Hell of a thing to say about a life as long as mine, but there you are. Perhaps because so many people so badly wanted me to care.
Father...
I cared about your mother, about James, and about you. That's all. Your mother and James are gone, so that just leaves you. And you are everything I wished I could be and never was. Passionate, committed, honorable. I am proud of you, son.
Douglas just nodded numbly, too surprised even to say anything in return. King William looked out over his court.
Be king, Douglas. Do the right thing as often as you can. They won't love you for it. They'll adore you from a distance, but that doesn't mean anything. They only ever love the symbol, the public face, not the person underneath. In the end, they only remember the things you didn't do that you promised you would, or the things they think you should have done. or the things you got wrong. And if you do manage to do something right, well, that's your job. That's what they pay taxes for. And Douglas, never trust Parliament. As far as they're concerned, you're just something they can use to hide behind. A public face to take the blame when things don't work out the way they were supposed to.
Suddenly, William looked even older and smaller.
I did my best.
Of course you did.
William leaned close to look Douglas straight in the eye.
Do you know how it feels to know you did your best and know it wasn't good enough? To know that all you managed to do was maintain the status quo? I hated being king. From the very first day they jammed the crown on my head and bound me to my throne with chains of duty. I only stayed on so long because your mother so loved being queen. And because I wanted to spare you the burden of being king for as long as I could, so you could at least have a taste of the freedom I never knew. You're walking into a velvet-lined trap, Douglas, and there's nothing I can do to save you.
Douglas didn't have a single clue what to say for the best. Not once before, from his childhood days to full adulthood, had his father ever opened up to him like this. They'd never been ones for heart-to-hearts with anyone, either of them. And now, it all sounded very much like an old man desperate to say the things that needed to be said while there was still time. Douglas wished he could feel more touched by it. He'd never felt close to either of his parents. They'd always kept him at a distance, perhaps afraid to lose another child they loved. They were always there for the public, but never for him. A less well-adjusted man would be bitter. And now, to learn it had all been deliberate, so that he could grow up to be his own man, and nothing like the father who had cared for him after all, in his own way.
Douglas!
Douglas looked around gratefully, ready to seize on any diversion. And there, striding across the floor of the court towards him, came the Paragon Louis Deathstalker, current holder of a proud and ancient name. Douglas hurried down the steps, leaving the thrones behind him, and the two old friends clasped hands warmly.
Ha 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 ha! Louis! Rot bastard. It's good to see your ugly face.
King William looked on, trying not to be too impatient, as Louis and Douglas brought each other up to date on what had been happening in their lives in the few weeks they'd been apart. The king would have sent anyone else packing with a flea in his ear, old friend or not, but Louis was different. William approved of the current Deathstalker. Louis had one of the best-known faces of all the Paragons, broad, harsh-featured, ugly, full of character, but already showing the signs of many hard knocks. The Deathstalker had never bothered with even the simplest cosmetic touches, to move his face towards, well, rugged, if not actually handsome. As far as Douglas knew, the thought had never even occurred to Louis. The Deathstalker was short and blocky, well-muscled by choice and exercise, rather than via the shortcuts of the body shop, and so broad-chested that in certain lights he seemed almost as wide as he was tall. He wore his jet-black hair in a short military cut, mostly so he wouldn't have to bother with it, shaved when he remembered, and had surprisingly mild brown eyes and a brief but flashing smile. He'd only just hit his late 20s, but already there was about him a certain gravitas that made him seem older, wiser, more dangerous. He wore his Paragon's armor sloppily, and there was always a buckle or two hanging loose somewhere. But he never looked one inch less than utterly professional. He had large, heavily knuckled hands that rarely strayed far from the weapons on his hips. He looked competent. No matter where he was, no matter what the challenge, Louis always looked like he knew exactly what he was doing. Douglas had always envied him that. He would have been surprised beyond measure to know that Louis often felt much the same about him. The two of them had been close friends and partners in arms for almost 10 years now. Their record for running villains to ground was unmatched by any other Paragon, except the legendary Finn Durandal, greatest of them all. The Deathstalker and the Campbell, knights errant and defenders of the realm. Louis could have been famous if he'd wanted, if he'd cared, but mostly he didn't. One famous Deathstalker in the family is enough, was all he'd ever been known to say on the subject. Louis was the best kind of Paragon, which, ironically, tended to make him one of the least noticed. He couldn't be bothered to play the publicity game, not when there was real work to be done. And whereas the other paragons milked their fame for all it was worth, with an eye to providing for their future when they retired, Lewis would just nod to the media when they turned up, smile politely when he remembered, and go looking for some more trouble to clean up. He was admired but not adored, renowned but not famous, and the man every paragon wanted guarding his back when things got nasty. That this most unprepossessing of paragons should have ended up closest to the man who would be king both infuriated and charmed the other paragons in equal measure. The inner circle of paragons was the king's justice. Each world in the empire sent its greatest hero, its most deadly warrior to Logris, to become part of the fabled circle, part of the glorious legend of the paragons. The king couldn't be everywhere, but his justice could. When the law wasn't enough, when peace enforcement failed, whenever men of bad intent threatened to triumph, send for a paragon. The public couldn't get enough of these heroic men and women, the brightest and the best the civilized worlds had to offer, and each and every paragon would fight to the death rather than betray that honor and that trust. They didn't last long, as a rule. Most tended to retire young. In fact, it was rare to find a paragon over 30. It was a dangerous business, after all, with a high fatality rate and a high turnover. Even the brightest of heroes could burn out quickly from the endless danger, the never-ending work, and the constant pressure. With all eyes forever on them, the paragons couldn't allow themselves to be any less than perfect. But in their time, they were splendid and magnificent, the greatest fighting men and women of their age.
They're all coming here. All of us. Damn. I don't think I've ever seen more than half a dozen in one place. And that was during the Quantum Inferno affair. But it looked like we were going to lose all six of the Heart Sons.
Paragons are like family. We only ever really get together for weddings and funerals and the like. Besides, my coronation is going to be broadcast live to all the worlds in the Empire. Do you really think our noble brothers and sisters would turn down a chance to be seen by such a huge audience? Just think what it will do for their merchandising and licensing fees.
Now you know what I think about that shit. I was working alongside Miracle Grant once, and he actually broke off in the middle of a battle to plug his new T-shirt to a news camera.
Oh, yes, Grant. How are his new legs coming along?
Growing back nicely, last I heard. Teach him to turn his back on a son of the wolf.
Lewis looked about him, frowning.
I really don't like the idea of so many paragons in one place. It'll be a sitting target for any really determined terrorist with a bomb.
Security here is top rank. Trust me on this, Lewis. You couldn't smuggle a dirty hanky in here without setting off some kind of alarm. In 6 hours' time, this court will be the safest place to be in the whole Empire. And it will do our fellow paragons good to be among their own kind for once. Let them see they're not unique. Maybe even help some of them get their egos in perspective.
Several very cutting comments occurred to Lewis, but he kept them to himself. He didn't want to upset Douglas on the eve of his coronation. Lewis had already spent the best part of an hour testing the court security, and had only had to raise his voice to half a dozen people and punch out one who really should have known better than to raise his voice to Lewis Deathstalker when he was so very clearly in the wrong. Lewis had also used the council security systems to run a trace on exactly where each and every paragon was, just for his own peace of mind. Most were still in transit, on their way to Logris from the outlying worlds. Even with the new improved star drive of the H-class ships, the Empire was still a very big place. All the paragons were safe and secure, for now. Most paragons rarely left the worlds they'd been assigned to, but all of them were familiar with Logris. All paragons did a tour of duty there, early in their careers. It was expected of them. If you could handle everything Logris could throw at you, you could survive anything. Logris produced the finest of everything, including villains. No paragon ever objected to a tour on Logris. It was an honor to defend humanity's homeworld, and a really good chance to get noticed by some of the main media networks. The better your recognition, the more you could charge to endorse products. No paragons ever defended their own home planet. No one ever actually mentioned the words conflict of interest, but then some things just didn't need to be said out loud. Lewis Deathstalker was something of a special case. He'd come to Logris from Viramont and stayed, even though Logris had its own paragon in Finn Durandal, because Douglas had taken a liking to the earnest young man with the legendary name. So, for 10 years, humanity's homeworld had been blessed with the presence of 3 paragons, Douglas and Lewis and Finn, and as a result, was the safest and most law-abiding place to live in the whole empire. No one had actually raised the point of what might happen once Douglas retired to become king, but an awful lot of people were thinking about it. Not all of them very nice people.
You know, with so many paragons already in the Parade of the Endless, and more on the way, crime in the city is at an all-time low. Most of the bad guys are probably hiding under their beds, waiting for it all to be over.
I guess everyone's following the build-up to the ceremony. Apparently the official website has already crashed 3 times from oversubscription.
I told them that would happen, but does anyone ever listen to me? Well, if nothing else, that should change come tomorrow. What's your website like these days, Lewis? Still got that fan of yours running it for you?
He does a good job. I can't afford to have some big public relations firm come in and run it, like some of the guys do. I'd rather have someone doing it as a labor of love, someone who cares. And some of his graphics are quite sophisticated. For the budget. I log on anonymously now and again, just to keep him honest.
With your name, you could be the biggest paragon that ever was. Even bigger than the Durandal.
Oh, you know how I feel about the cult of personality. If we start caring too much about being liked, being popular, it's bound to interfere with how we do our job.
You have to think about where the money's going to come from when you retire. There is a pension, but it's crap. Everyone knows that. A few carefully thought-out product endorsements from the Death Stalker himself, and you'd never have to worry about money ever again.
I never worry about money. I don't have a wife or children to support, and I never found the time to develop any expensive tastes. Besides, I always seem to have more important things to worry about.
Douglas gave up. Some people wouldn't recognize common sense if he had clubbed them over the head with it.
So, what present did you bring me? It's Christmas and my coronation, 2 special occasions in one. So I'm expecting something really special from you, Lewis. Best thing about being king, you get lots of presents.
You're not king till you're crowned. Wait till it's safely over and done with, and then you can start opening your presents. Probably mostly socks and handkerchiefs anyway. That's mostly what I get from my relatives these days. You know, when I was a kid, I would have been outraged to get an item of clothing as a Christmas present. Now I'm grateful for something so practical. How sad is that?
If I get socks, they'd better be jewel encrusted. I'm going to be king soon, Lewis. And I have a horrible feeling everything's going to change between us. This could be the last time we'll be able to speak to each other as equals. So, tell me, as your friend, why did you want to become a paragon? You don't give a damn for the fame or the joys of combat, and we've already established it wasn't for the money. So why, Lewis? Why give your life to a job that kills most people before they hit 30?
To protect people? The Deathstalker inheritance. A family duty. To protect the innocent from those who would prey upon them.
He didn't mention Viramond. He didn't have to. The homeworld of the Deathstalkers had been destroyed on the Empress Lionstone's orders. Wrecked and ruined, its people had been slaughtered, its cities and towns devastated, its green and pleasant lands trampled into mud and scorched to ashes. The new empire had overseen its terraforming and repopulation, but Viramond was a poor and grim place, and would be for centuries yet to come. The last of the old Deathstalker line, David, had died there, abandoned by his allies. No paragon to save him in his hour of need. Like all paragons, Lewis had taken an oath at his investiture to protect the innocent and avenge injustice. He had more reason than most to take that oath very seriously.
So, why are you a paragon, Douglas? I know going in was your father's idea, but you stayed on long after you could have retired with honor. At 40, you're the 3rd oldest paragon still serving. Why have you stayed so long? What's kept you in the circle?
I wanted to lead and inspire people by example. I didn't win my place as a paragon like you and all the others. I had to prove myself, to you and to the public. Everyone expected me to fail, to limp off home crying to Daddy that the game was too rough. I won't say I wasn't scared at first. People seemed to be lining up for a chance to kick the crap out of the heir to the throne. But a funny thing happened. In proving myself, I found myself. When you're a king's son, growing up, you get the best of everything by right. Nothing is denied you, so nothing really matters. You only really value what you earn by your own efforts. And I earned my place in the circle.
Is that why you've stayed so long? Because you had to keep proving to yourself that you were worthy? Douglas, no one has doubted that in 20 years.
Jesus, Lewis, do you really think I'm that shallow? I stayed because I finally found something I'm good at. And because people needed me. I was making a difference. I could see it every day in the people I saved and the bad guys I put away. And because I made myself into something better, I hope to inspire others to do the same. I wanted to show them that we can all be heroes. We can all be paragons.
If the people had the guts to stand up for themselves, they'd never have needed paragons in the first place.
Douglas and Lewis looked around sharply as Logris's third paragon came striding over to join them. Servants scattered like startled geese to get out of his way, but Finn Durandal didn't recognize their existence by so much as a blink of the eye. Finn nodded to Douglas and Lewis as he came to a halt before them and smiled briefly.
I became a paragon to beat the shit out of bad guys, and I thank the good Lord daily that there's never any shortage. Put a sword in my hand and point me at a scumbag, and there's nowhere I'd rather be.
Yes, but you're weird, Finn.
Finn Durandal was tall, muscular, and almost inhumanly graceful in his movements. He had a classically handsome face, topped with a mop of curly golden hair that he freely admitted owed nothing to nature. And he spent a lot of time thinking about his image. He had poise and elegance, and in any room, everyone's eyes would go to him first. It was a cold, calculated charisma, but no less affecting for that. People tended to like Finn on sight, but became more than a little uneasy the longer they spent in his presence. He could be devilishly charming, but unless it was a paid public engagement, mostly, he just couldn't be bothered. At 52, Finn Durandal was the oldest, longest-serving paragon since the Circle began. People felt safer all across the Empire knowing Finn was still out there, standing between them and the bad guys. Of course, most of those people had never met him. Finn had a thin-lipped smile, calm gray eyes, and his hollow hung on the bedroom wall of many an impressionable teenager. His website was the biggest and most heavily subscribed of all the paragons. He had his own fan club, and a series of nicely calculated licensing deals had made him very rich. He could retire any time he wanted, but everyone knew he wouldn't. Action and adventure were his meat and drink, and he'd never been known to back away from any danger, any odds. He was the greatest paragon there'd ever been. It said so on his website, so it must be true. He was the best at everything he did, because he wouldn't settle for anything less. It helped that he had the best weapons, the best trainers, and the best muscles and reflexes that money could buy. Finn left absolutely nothing to chance.
Immaculately turned out as always, Finn. I can practically see my face in your breastplate. Why can't you look more like him, Lewis?
Because I can't afford a butler. Hell, I'm lucky if I remember to shine my shoes in the morning.
You're just jealous of my magnificence, puny mortal.
I prefer modesty.
And you have so much to be modest about.
Girls, girls!
Unfortunately, we don't have time for banter right now. I'm sorry to snatch your associate away, Douglas, but I'm here on official Paragon business. We're needed, Lewis. An emergency has broken out at the arenas.
Wonderful, marvelous bloody timing. What is it? One of their imported killer aliens broken loose again? I told them they were asking for trouble bringing those monsters in from Chandrakor.
The arena's got tanglefields and sleep gas. Let arena security deal with it.
It's not that simple. It's the elves.
Oh, shit. I'll have to go, Douglas.
Of course you do. Why now, of all times?
I doubt it's a coincidence. More likely, they're looking to get in one last atrocity before the majority of the Circle arrive and the elves are forced to go underground with the rest of the rats. And perhaps, as a gesture to you, Douglas, to show you they're not impressed or intimidated by a paragon becoming king.
For two pins, I'd go with you. Hell, I'm still officially a paragon till the crown hits my head. Damn it, I am going with you. Come on, we'll teach the elves one last lesson they won't forget.
You're not going anywhere.
All three paragons looked sharply around, and then bowed formally as King William slowly descended the steps from the throne. He nodded to Finn and Lewis, and then glared at Douglas, who glared right back, his hands knotted into fists at his sides. William met his son's gaze steadily, and in the end, it was Douglas who looked away first.
I know. More rehearsals, more ceremony and protocol.
You're not a paragon anymore. That part of your life is over. Let the Deathstalker and the Durandal handle it. They know what they're doing.
Don't worry, Douglas. It's only a bunch of elves, after all.
He nodded briskly to Lewis, and the two of them strode quickly away, heading out of the court and into danger and excitement, their backs straight and their heads held high. They were going out to face some of the most dangerous creatures currently threatening humanity, to face horror and suffering and sudden death, but they didn't hesitate. They might have been going to a party, they were so casual about it. They were paragons. And Douglas would have given everything he owned to be going with them.
Oh, wipe that look off your face, young man. You have greater responsibilities now. I do understand the attraction. But you'll find that if you apply yourself, you can do far more for your people as king than you ever could as a paragon. There's more to power over people's lives than the edge of a sword.
Yes, father.
You always did have a way of agreeing with me that sounded just like go to hell. Got that from your mother. Speaking of which, we need to talk, Douglas. I'll admit I've been putting this off, searching for just the right moment, but I can't in good faith keep this from you any longer.
You're not about to tell me I'm adopted, are you?
No.
Or a clone?
Shut up, Douglas. There is a part of the ceremony we haven't discussed yet. An extra announcement that will be made concerning a decision that has been made by myself and Parliament. A decision in which you don't get a say. It's unfair, bordering on arbitrary, but it comes with a job. I can only hope that you are, despite all my misgivings, mature enough to understand its necessity.
Father, stop twittering! What the hell are you talking about?
You're going to be married.
What?
A marriage has been arranged for you. A king must have a queen.
William met his son's gaze steadily.
And since these are two of the most important jobs in the Empire, they can't be left to just anybody, to the vagaries of the heart. And so, a marriage has been arranged, by myself and a parliamentary committee, between you and a suitable person. This will be announced to the watching public immediately after your coronation. And you will nod and smile and go along with it, because you have no choice in the matter, any more than I did.
You kept this quiet. Very bloody quiet.
And this is why. Because we all knew you'd have made a scene, given a chance. Discussions were held in the strictest secrecy, because we knew you'd object. Or, worse still, demand to be involved. I still remember that highly unfortunate affair you had with that exotic dancer. Appalling creature. Never did know what you saw in her.
She could put her ankles behind
you. I don't want to know! I knew this would happen. Your brother was just the same. Threw a hell of a tantrum when we sat him down and told him who his queen was going to be.
Douglas looked at his father sharply. Perfect James throwing a temper tantrum. He would have liked to ask more, but the king was pressing on.
Since we couldn't afford to have you making trouble, it was decided that I would break the news to you at the last possible moment, and this would appear to be it. I wish your mother were here. She was always so much better than I am at these things. And don't even think about running. I've got security men standing by with tanglefields and cattle prods, just in case. Joke.
Will you pardon me if I don't laugh? I can't believe you did all this behind my back. I always thought marriage was supposed to be the most important decision in a man's life.
In your case, it is. Far too important to be left to you. Royal marriages are affairs of state, not of the heart. Though it needn't stay that way. I learned to love your mother, eventually. I'm sure you'll come to love your queen, too, in time.
Well, are you at least going to tell me who it is? Or is it going to be a surprise?
Of course not, dear boy. You needn't look so disturbed. Nothing but the best for the man who will be king, after all. If I were only 50 years younger, I'd chase her around the room a few times myself. The hunchback suits her. Joke! Again! She's beautiful, intelligent, and she'll make a superb queen. Your bride will be Jessamine Flowers. You have heard of her?
Douglas felt his jaw drop, and it took him several moments to get enough air back into his lungs to be able to answer.
Heard of her? Jessamine Bloody Flowers? She's the most famous, the most talented diva in the whole damned empire, and the single most glamorous woman in all the civilized worlds. Hell, Jessamine's already so popular, she already is queen and everything but name. And this goddess has agreed to marry me?
Of course. Looked at logically, it's the obvious next career move for her. She's reached the pinnacle of her profession, played all the biggest roles on all the biggest stages, made more money than she knows what to do with, and she couldn't be any more famous if she tried. She is the biggest sensation in the Empire today. But where else can she go? If she continues as she is, she'll just end up repeating herself. Or worse still, squandering her talents on roles unworthy of her. When you've reached the top of your profession, the only place left to go is down. The only way for her to become even more fabulous is to move out of art and into politics. There's nothing like the adulation of the masses to give you a taste for power over them. She could become a Member of Parliament, of course, but I think she'd see that as a step down. But to be queen, to sit in state over the greatest empire humanity has ever known.
Douglas looked sardonically at his father.
Are you going to give her the bad news, or is that my job? After we're married. Power my arse. She'll scream the place down once she learns the truth. And God alone knows what kind of scream an opera singer can produce when she really puts her mind to it.
The roles of king and queen are something the two of you will have to work out with Parliament. I personally plan to be thoroughly retired and deep in hiding when the explosions begin. Now, do smarten yourself up, Douglas. Make an effort. Jessamine Flowers will be here very soon, and you do want to make a good first impression, don't you?
Out over the city, flying high above the Parade of the Endless on their own personalized gravity sleds, Lewis Deathstalker and Finn Durandal raced over brightly shining towers linked by delicate bridges, massive globes and pyramids shimmering with lights, minarets, and monoliths, all currently blessed with an unmarked layer of snow. The planet's weather satellites have been programmed to provide the city with traditional Christmas weather in honor of the great ceremony. It all looked pretty enough, the clear white snow under the late afternoon sun. But winter weather was no fun at all when you had to fly through it at speed. Snow and ice produced bracing, if not downright bitter, winds, and the freezing air cut at the Paragons like knives as they shot through it on their way to the arenas. Lewis and Finn crouched down behind the force shields that protected the front of their sleds, huddled inside their cloaks, and hunched their shoulders against the growing cold that gnawed at their bones. They could have slowed down, made it easier on themselves, but this was an emergency. People were in trouble. And although neither Finn nor Lewis would ever have admitted it, even to themselves, neither of them would have given in first. The arena was set square in the middle of the city, just as it had always been, a huge stone coliseum surrounding blood-soaked sands. The structure had been expanded several times over the last two centuries, but there was still a long waiting list for even the poorest seats, and the right to certain prime locations were jealously guarded and handed down only within the family. Everyone watched the holo broadcasts, of course, but everyone knew it wasn't the same as being there in person. These days, it was strictly volunteers only, and every would-be gladiator had to undergo a strict psychological profile before he or she was allowed out onto the bloody sands. And the current high levels of medical care meant that very few people actually died and stayed dead in the arenas. But it was still all about courage and honor and skill, and putting them all on the line for the pleasure of the crowds. The arenas had never been more popular. The board of directors had put on a special bill for Christmas and the coronation, involving all the main champions, several tag teams, and a whole load of vicious and dangerous, non-sentient aliens imported from all across the Empire. The crowd was the biggest ever, standing in the aisle shoulder to shoulder. The greatest show on Logris. And then, the elves came. The elves. In the time of the Blessed Owen Deathstalker, the Espers discovered that they had been secretly manipulated by the needs and desires of their own subconscious gestalt mind, the Mater Mundi. Diana Virtue exposed this, and all the Espers in the Empire joined together in a single great conscious gestalt, and took control of their own destiny for the first time. They called this mass mind the Oversoul. Millions of minds working together, achieving miracles, never to be alone again. But some Esper minds were too disturbed or damaged to remain a part of the Gestalt. Their madness threatened the whole, and so they had to be expelled from the Oversoul. Other minds removed themselves from the Gestalt, fearing the loss of their individuality, afraid of domination by a conscious Mater Mundi. And some had secrets and shames and desires they would not share with anyone. They turned their faces away and hid in the shadows. These were the new elves, the Esper Liberation Force, dedicated to liberating themselves from the tyranny of the Oversoul. Banding together, seeing all others as enemies, the elves declared themselves clearly superior to the ungifted members of the human race, and therefore destined to first rule and then replace baseline humanity. They said the Oversoul was mad and had to be destroyed. And since everyone was the enemy, any elf attack, no matter how vicious, was really nothing more than self-defense. No one knew exactly how many elves there were. They struck from the shadows without warning, hurting the world before it could hurt them, exulting in the punishing of those who would hold them back from their rightful destiny. That's what everybody knew. But there were rumors, dark, ugly rumors. Some said the elves were led by the last of the Super Espers, mental freaks and monsters created on the secret order of the Mater Mundi. Mad minds, terrible creatures, artificially evolved far beyond or behind humanity. So secret that only their names or designations were known. Grim and sinister titles from a terrible past. The Shatter Freak, Blue Hellfire, Screaming Silence, The Gray Train, The Spider Harps. No one knew for sure, or if they did, they were too scared to talk. Lewis steered his gravity sled in beside Finn's as they approached the towering outer wall of the arena, the grim gray stone rising up before them.
How bad is it, you know?
Bad. Maybe a dozen elves. More than have been seen in one place for over 30 years.
Enough to take on the whole arena crowd?
More than enough. They're stronger when they work together, you know that. First reports talk of hundreds dead. By now, it could be thousands.
Then why hasn't the Oversoul sent help? The Psycho Sluts. They've got a good track record against the elves.
Them? They're more trouble than they're worth. I don't want those show-offs anywhere near me. Crazy as their progenitor and dangerous with it.
We need backup on this, Finn.
We won't be getting any help from the Espers, Lewis. I already checked. They've got their hands full with an elf attack on New Hope. The greatest concentration of Espers on Logris is currently under attack by a suicide mine, broadcasting cannibalism memes all over the city. It's all the Oversoul can do to keep a lid on its own people, and stop them from eating each other, or themselves. They said they'll turn up when they can, so don't expect them anytime soon.
What about the other paragons in town for the ceremony?
Too far away. By the time they get here, it'll be all over, one way or the other. And all the local peacekeepers have been told to stand down and hide behind their S-blockers. No point in giving the elves more minds to mess with. No, Lewis, it's down to us. Turn on your S-blocker. We're going in.
Lewis's hand went immediately to the flat box at his waist. Cloned Esper brain tissues, activated by an electric current. Not alive, not in any way conscious, but once activated, capable of broadcasting a telepathic signal that blocked all Esper powers in its vicinity. For a time, anyway. Finn glanced at Lewis, grinned briefly, and then his sled topped the Colosseum's outer wall and plunged down into the arena. And Lewis was right there with him.